Good evening across America and around the world. You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. You know, our stint with the Paul Revere's Ride, that's one of my treasures from my library. I've read it, I don't know how many times, at least 8 or 9 times I've read the whole book. And it just made me want to go back and redo the whole Revolutionary War. So I read Patriots. That's another one of the treasures from my library. And I'll talk about that one night. I'm not going to talk about it tonight. I'm not going to tell you the author, and I'm not going to tell you any of that stuff. I just want to let you know that it's one of those things that all Americans need to be doing all the time. It's our heritage. It's our lives. It is the foundation of everything that happened to make this the greatest nation on the face of this earth. The men who put this country together, who founded it, who instigated, and yes, I mean instigated, everybody thinks the British instigated the Revolutionary War, but that's just not true. And if you've studied the true history of it, it's all really lays in the lap of one man. Samuel Adams literally, almost single-handedly, engineered the American Revolution to create a new nation. It's an incredible story that all Americans should know. Unfortunately, very few Americans know anything about any of it, except for a few lies they've heard and passed down and relayed over the years. Incredible story. Incredible people. Geniuses. The founders were geniuses. They knew more about people and human nature than anyone, probably, who's ever lived. And for that many geniuses to congregate in one place to create the greatest nation ever upon the face of this earth, and for the first time, free the common man and make him a king in his own right with a government as his chattel servant, was the most incredible thing that's ever happened in the history of the world. And it just escapes me why Americans don't want to know anything about it. They don't, because if they did, they would. It's all there. A few trips to the library. Lots and lots of books written about it. There's only a few that tell the truth and tell it all. One is Paul Revere's Ride. The other one is Patriots. In fact, Paul Revere's Ride is the only book ever written that tells the true story of Paul Revere's Ride and exactly what happened on April the 18th and April the 19th, 1775. And Patriots is the only book ever written that tells the entire story of the American Revolution from its very remote beginnings all the way to its end. And all of the stories of all of the men and women who participated in between, including those on the British side. There's lots of books about individuals, lots of books about individual events, but these are the two books that put it together for you, so that you can understand and see the whole picture and really know what it was all about and who did it. Whose lap held the ultimate responsibility for the manipulation and the propaganda and the leadership that brought it all about? Samuel Adams, without any doubt. Samuel Adams was the man. Everybody thinks it was George Washington. No, George Washington was an insignificant representative from Virginia once in a while until he was nominated and elected as the supreme commander of the American Revolutionary Forces, the Continental Army of the Republic. And when you read the true history of the Revolutionary War, you'll see that General George Washington made a lot of really terrible, bad mistakes, and it was just through luck or the intervention of divine providence that he didn't lose that war, because he was really not a great military commander. He was a great man, to be sure. People loved him, worshipped him. Some of the men, the brilliant men who were responsible for winning the battles, most of you never heard of. Incredible stuff. Just incredible. Today I got a CD in, and most of you don't know this, but you know, when I was in high school, well, all my days in school were spent overseas in foreign countries, except for 2 years in Monroney Junior High School in Midwest City, Oklahoma. All the rest of my life, I went to school in foreign countries, as my father was an Air Force pilot. And we spent, most of my young life in foreign countries on Air Force bases. And so I graduated from high school, from Yamato High School in Japan. While I was there, I originally started at Narimasu near Tokyo. And while I was there, I became a disc jockey on the Armed Forces Radio Network on a program called Radio Teen. And I was known to all the teenagers in Japan, Japanese and American alike, because everybody listened to it, as the Mad Lad. And my theme song was Quiet Village. It was a lot of fun. It was a dream come true, actually. I don't know of any young person who didn't have aspirations at one time during their life of becoming a disc jockey on radio. Well, I were one when I was a teen. When I was 15 and 16 years old, 2 years of my young life, I was a disc jockey on Armed Forces Radio Network, Japan, Radio Teen, as the Mad Lad. And I was pretty good. And I was kind of reliving it for the hour preceding the broadcast, the hour of the time on 101.1 FM here in the Round Valley. And I'm nowhere near as good as I was when I was a teenager and really knew all the singers and their history and the records and what was going on and, you know, could come off with these flip comments off the top of my head like I was born to do it. But I didn't lose at all. I wasn't that bad. And of course, I wasn't as good as I was when I was doing it, when I was, 15, 16 years old. But, boy, it's a lot of fun. For the past hour preceding this broadcast, I was having a lot of fun and listening to some great music. See, nobody in the world has music like we have here in this studio. We have every single, listen to me carefully now, we have every single rock and roll production from the 50s and 60s that anybody ever did. If you lived through that period and you thought that you were up to date on music and that you knew it all and you were listening to it and you were there and you were into it, if you were here in the Round Valley and you listen to this station all the time, you'd be hearing rock and roll tunes from that era that were great that you never heard before in your life. And that most people never will hear in their life, and even collectors don't have copies of a lot of this stuff that I have. People say my taste in music is eclectic, and it is. It really is. Whatever that really means. But I will tell you this. I love music. I love all music. I even love some of the music that they make today, because all genres of music have its great moments and its terrible, stinky, rotten, you don't even want to hear it moments. But the greatest music that ever came out of America, for everybody who really loves music, was the period of the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. Now, there's some great music before that, and there's some great music after that. But before that and after that, there is nothing that even approaches the sheer numbers and magnitude and excellence and proliferation of just really great American music. And so I have concentrated most of my collection during that period, but I have a collection that would be envied by some of the greatest music collectors in the entire world. I get calls all the time. Where did you get that song? Who made it? How can I get a copy? And even when I tell them, they don't know what I'm talking about. But that's neither here nor there. I love presenting to my listening audience, either on 101.1 FM or on the international broadcast of WBCQ, what I believe to be good, great, fantastic music. And on this show, The Hour of the Time, I usually try to mix the music with the message. People have noticed that, too. Gee, how in the world do you know so much about music that when you're doing a show on blankety-blankety-blank that you just plug in this music and it just fits to the T like somebody putting on a pair of pants that's just exactly their size? Well, all I can tell you is it's because I love music. I've loved music all my life. And I've got to tell you, folks, if it hadn't been for the fact that nobody else was standing up and telling the story and alerting the American people to what's going on in this country that people need to know about, my whole life would have been so totally different from what it is. I would have been involved in a lot of creative things. My degree from college is in photography. I love photography. Love it, especially black and white. I love to go out and spend a day, and I mean a whole day, like 8 hours, and take maybe 4 photographs during that entire 8 hours. That's how much time I take planning and executing and setting up and all of these things to just make that one photograph and then take it back to the dark room. And when I come out of that dark room, I don't have a photograph. I have a work of art, something that someone can look at and say, oh, my God, that is just the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. That's what I like to do. I love music. I would most likely have a radio show doing music. I would be involved in creating a theater in my community and helping young people learn to become actors and actresses. These are the things that I would be literally up to my neck involved in. I would still be playing the trumpet and singing, probably. Years ago, I was a good trumpet player. I mean, really good. And I was a good singer. We even cut some records. I was a member of a group that we called the Bel Airs. And I don't know if you ever heard of us or not. We did cut a few records. And there was another group called the Bel Air. I bet there may have been three or four groups called the Bel Airs, to tell you the truth. When I went to high school in Japan, I played the trumpet. We had a band, and we were so good. And I'm not tooting my horn because I don't know how good we were in relationship to anybody else, but we were so good in Japan that the Japanese movie industry, whenever they had a party, I mean a big to-do for all their movie stars and directors and producers and all that kinds of thing, guess whose band they hired? They hired us. And we had a great time. Just a great time. Just a wonderful time. What brings all this back is I found a website on the internet. Well, let me back up a little bit more from that. You see, I'm what you call a military brat. Air Force brat, to be exact. My father was an Air Force pilot. We lived all over the world. Went to school all over the world. Never stayed in any one place longer than 2 or 3 years, sometimes just a year. Just enough to start to get to know people and really, you know, fit in socially and, you know, and then bang, we're gone. And then you're the new guy. Oh, watch what you say. Here comes the new guy, you know. And then you make your name and your reputation and you fit in. And then pretty soon you're saying, oh, watch what you say. Here comes the new guy. You know how that works. Only in the military, if you're a military brat, it's much worse than anything that you can dream of. And it just breaks your heart when you have to leave all your friends and move somewhere else. All your life. Especially when you're young. It's a terrible thing. And, but that's, you know, that's the way that it was. And so when I grew up and left home and I never, ever, ever, ever met, heard of, or saw anyone that I ever went to school with in my whole life, until not too long ago, I found a website for my old high school in Japan, the high school where I graduated, class of 61. Went to that website, and goosebumps were going up and down my spine and up and down my legs, and the hair was standing up on the back of my neck. And I had this incredible emotional reaction. Tears came in my eyes, and I was just so happy. It was like going home after being gone for 40 years or something. It was an incredible experience. And the person who built this website had put up all the yearbook pictures for all the years that the high school had been in existence. And I went to class of 61, and there were all my buddies and my girlfriend and a picture of me. It was just incredible. And then I found out they were having a high school reunion, which took place just this last weekend in Las Vegas. I couldn't go. I wanted to go. I wanted to go so bad I could taste it. Dreamed about it. Spent hours wondering what everybody looks like now. Wishing that I could be there. Because all my life, see, I've never had a hometown. Never had any place where I can go and say, oh, I went to school there. We had a graduate ceremony over there and on the lawn. Oh, there's old Miss Evans. She taught me Latin. My golly, God, look how old she is, you know. I never could do that. Most of the schools I attended don't exist anymore. Just don't exist. And they're in foreign countries. Hard to get to. Even if they did exist. And all of the people that I went to school with were scattered over the earth. Like the debris from the worst tornado that ever hit anything. Never heard of any of them. Never saw any of them. Never heard from any of them. Some of them I loved dearly. We had some incredible experiences together, like everyone else has had with their schoolmates growing up. Well, I had experiences like that too. Incredible experiences. Some I could tell you stories about, and you would just be hanging on your speaker of your radio listening to these stories because they're good stories. And I've often wondered what happened to them. I know some of them are probably dead now. Are crippled or something. I know that none of them are really famous people because I've never seen or heard any of them in the news or anywhere. They may be famous in their hometown or the state, but not nationally. Unless they've changed their name. I'm not sure I would recognize any of them if I saw them on the news. When you moved around like that when you're young and you don't have a hometown, it leaves this incredible empty spot in you somewhere. It's like there's a hole in your soul. And you keep trying to fill it. Well, I filled it by adopting the nation as my hometown and going to work to save it. That's how I filled the hole. And I know that some of you listening to this broadcast have had the same experience, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like a whole part of your life just was a dream because you can't touch it, you can't feel it, you can't go find it. There's nobody there that was with you. And they're the most wonderful memories because I truly, I can say this with no reservation whatsoever, I truly had one of the most wonderful childhoods that you could imagine. In high school, was a dream, literally. We had it made. It was a time when nobody was afraid of anything or anybody. Everybody was good. I mean, the worst thing that we ever did was ditch school and go motorcycle riding. Outside of Narmasu was the Honda Motorcycle Company. And at that time, just consisted of a few Quonset huts. We knew Mr. Honda personally. We knew him personally, and this was back in 1958, 1959, 1960, 1961. We knew him personally. We saw the motorcycles that people in this country fell in love with years later and were riding them before you even knew they existed. We would just go down and rent them from him. And sometimes he would want us to ride his motorcycle so he could take pictures of us Americans riding his motorcycles, and he would use that in his advertising. And of course, I think we saved him from a couple of big mistakes. He made a scrambler one time. It was a beautiful motorcycle, but the center of gravity was so high that anybody who ever tried to get into serious competition with that bike was dead. They would have been dead. And so we told him about that, and he changed it, lowered the center of gravity. And so that probably saved a lot of lives. We just had incredible fun. And every once in a while, we'd go see our Japanese friend who worked at the snack bar on Tachikawa Air Force Base. And he would sell us cases of Heineken's. Not this stuff that's brewed in the United States that they put a Heineken's label on. This is no different than the horse pee called Coors. He would sell us real imported Heineken's for 25 cents a bottle. And we'd all pitch in, and we'd all load up in the couple of cars that we had and go up to Moriyama Park with some portable record players, and we'd have a dance and drink beer. Nobody would get hurt. We wouldn't hurt anybody. We never destroyed anyone's property. We just had a good time. It was incredible. And so that's what I've been thinking about. All my old high school friends had a reunion in Las Vegas this weekend. And thanks to the scum-sucking, puke-faced, lying bastard, pig, socialist, communist, subversive traitors in this government, who have issued a warrant for my arrest, In order not to endanger anyone else's lives, I could not go to my high school reunion. And so that's another mark on my little scorecard. For any fool that tries to come up here and execute that warrant. When I pull the trigger, I'll be thinking of that. And I will pull the trigger. Lots of times. I never hated anybody in my life, but I'm learning to hate these scum-sucking pigs. I never thought that I could hate anybody. Never wanted to hate anybody. But I've had to send my wife and children out of the country to save their lives, to protect them from these puke-faced, scum-sucking pigs. Couldn't attend my high school reunion. Why? Because I'm a loyal American. Believe wholeheartedly in the Constitution for the United States of America, which is the supreme law of the land and outlines exactly what the government is, what it can do, what it can't do, the powers that it has, the powers that it does not have. I've researched the law. I know what it is. I refuse to pay their tribute. And that's what it is. It's a tribute paid by slaves to their master. And I tell the truth. Four nights a week on this broadcast, for which I have been labeled by the President of the United States as the most dangerous radio host in America, the greatest compliment that has ever been paid to me in my entire life. I revel in it, as a matter of fact. I'm learning to hate them. I never hated anyone in my entire life. Never in my life. For any reason. Nobody did anything ever in my life that was so bad that I've even considered hating them for it. And I'm not sure I really hate these people yet, but I'm learning to. I'm getting close. And I'm pretty sure that I'm going to. And they have a way of corrupting other people and corrupting them totally. See, because what I'm going to tell you about now is just another great disappointment in my life. I made a friend here in the Round Valley. At least I thought he was a friend. I believed him when he told me that he could be trusted and that anything that I ever told him would never, never be told to anyone else. I promoted his newspaper on this broadcast. I helped him whenever I could. Gave him free copies of things. Wrote some articles for his paper. I admired him. But recently I found out that he's a total 100% complete fraud. He's a liar. He looked me right in the eye, lied to me not once, but many times. Told me that he was a friend, that he was a patriot, that I could trust him, and that anything I ever told him would never, ever be passed to anyone else. He's the editor of the Round Valley paper. His name is Glenn Jacobs. He's an informant. He's been an informant for a long time. I discovered from the Internal Revenue Service that he is the one who identified my house to Agent Frank Shupnik of the Internal Revenue Service when he came up here to sneak around and snoop and see what kind of property we had and everything. Glenn Jacobs. I learned from the United States Marshal Service that it was Glenn Jacobs who told the United States Marshal exactly where my house is. I've learned from local law enforcement officers that Glenn Jacobs has been a snitch for a long time. I learned that on the day that I told him that I had sent my wife and children out of the country and asked him, pleaded with him, please don't tell anyone because you will endanger their lives. And if the government feels that they're gone, they might come up here to kill me. He said, Bill, No one will ever hear that from my lips. But he went from my house directly to the police department and reported everything that I told him to the local police liaison, who then reports it to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Glenn Jacobs, liar, fraud. Makes me wonder what happens to the list of subscribers to his mostly patriot American newspaper. I wonder if the FBI has a list of all of the people who subscribe to that newspaper. I'm not telling you that they do, but they certainly do want to know all of the patriots in this country, because they can't have their new world order if we're unknown and willing to fight and die for freedom. That's why I happen to know that they do have programs to collect the identities, names, and addresses of patriots throughout the country. It's patriots who subscribe to Glenn Jacobs' newspaper. I was so hurt and disappointed when I found out that he was an informant. I had trusted him, believed him, told him things that I should never have told anyone except a loyal patriot. He endangered the lives of my wife and children. He endangered my life. I don't know why he did it. I don't know why anybody does these things. You see, because I happen to know for a fact, because I challenged Glenn on several occasions to produce anything that would prove that I was a criminal. Produce anything in the law that would show that they were justified in issuing a warrant for my arrest, and he could never do that. Never. No one can. Not even the Internal Revenue Service, not even the United States government can do it. So I have no idea why he did what he did. But I will tell you this. In keeping with the policy of all patriots, all militia units, all of us, who value the principles and ideals upon which this nation was founded and based, and all of those who are prepared to fight and die for freedom when that day comes, and it will come, I'm making this known, as all of us always make known those in our midst who are informants, so they cannot hurt anyone else in the future. That's the reason why I'm doing this. Do not go and hurt Glenn Jacobs or his family or his property. His family didn't do this. Glenn Jacobs did. Glenn Jacobs is a weak little man. God will deal with Glenn Jacobs. Glenn Jacobs has to answer to God for what he did. And I don't think God's going to be too happy with him, because I'm one of God's soldiers. And so now you know. I was so disappointed, so hurt, so terribly terribly crushed by that revelation that I think I cried for about 3 hours when I found out what he had done. And there is no doubt that he did it. No doubt whatsoever. It's come from several different sources. I also discovered that Glenn is no stranger to snitching for the police department. He's been doing it for years. And he always does it in a manner that, the law enforcement officers that have relayed this information to me say that he pretends like he really doesn't know anything. I don't know, but I sort of have a suspicion that maybe you ought to check into this and this. And he's been informing on his neighbors in the Round Valley here long time before I ever came here. Seems that old Glenn's just a professional snitch. I don't know why. I don't think I could ever understand it if I did know why. But I do know that Glenn is no longer welcome up here. Glenn has nothing to fear from me. I would never hurt him in a million years. I'm not the kind of person that goes out to seek revenge on somebody. I just want everybody else to know what he's doing so that they don't get hurt by him. We can't afford to lose any more patriots to snitches. Can't afford it. Most snitches that the patriot community has dealt with have not only snitched, but set up the patriots to be snitched upon. You all know the stories. We've covered many of them on this broadcast. The guys in Georgia who absolutely refused to participate and talk about building pipe bombs and blowing up government buildings. So the government snitches built pipe bombs and went out and buried them on their property. And so I began to take a real interest in things that Glenn had left up here, or places that I know that he had been. And he had brought one of his cars up here to park. We went through that car with a fine-tooth comb, just to make sure he hadn't set us up with anything. I spent my life serving this country, literally. I was reared in an Air Force family. When I left home, I joined the Air Force. Spent 4 years in the Strategic Air Command as an aircraft missile and hydraulic technician, working on B-52 bombers, KC-135 aircraft, and Minuteman missiles. During the Cuban crisis, I slept under the belly of a B-52 loaded with hydrogen bombs at Shepherd Air Force Base alert pad, ready to launch that plane against the Soviet Union on a moment's notice. Same thing when John F. Kennedy was killed. Same thing. Slept under the belly of a B-52 bomber on the alert pad, ready to launch it toward the Soviet Union in case they had been the author of the assassination of our president. Then I went in the United States Navy. Altogether, I had over 15 years service in the Air Force and the Navy for my country before I discovered what was going on behind the scenes and how the military was really working toward world government under the United Nations. And with a little less than 5 years to go before I could have retired very comfortably on what all of you call your tax dollars, I chose to get out instead. I could not be a part of it. And since then, I've still been serving my country, researching and educating, opposing tyranny, warning the American people, serving as an example. I would never ask you to do anything that I would not do myself. Preparing you for the battle that looms ahead. And all through all of these years, I have constantly been plagued with people like Glenn Jacobs. Who I'm sure thinks he was doing something noble in his own mind. But there was nothing noble about it. My stand was not just for me. You see, if there wasn't something tremendously weighty and important hanging in the balance here, why would I stand up alone against the entire machinations of the federal government? It's a battle in a war. I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution for the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and I will fulfill that oath. I will not bow to tyranny. I will not pay the slave tribute to any master. I will be a loyal American until the day I die. That's me. And you can take that to the bank. It's as good as gold. I want to say this again. Do not hurt Glenn Jacobs or his family. His family has done nothing to anyone. Glenn Jacobs will answer to God for what he did. Don't hurt his property. But if you are engaged in patriotic activities or anything that must be kept from certain organizations and agencies of the federal government, then you'd better stay away from Glenn Jacobs. Stay away from him. If you do anything to hurt him or his property, I will condemn you. And God will condemn you too. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Remember that. If you believe in the founding principles upon which this nation is based, then you believe that our battle must hold the moral high ground, and it must be defensive in nature. We can never do anything that would even have the slightest appearance of being improper or petty or vengeful, silly or stupid. It is holding the moral high ground that will cause us to win this war, and we will win this war. It is a war. It will become terrible in its aspect, and it will last for many years once it earnestly begins. I've spent many years trying to educate you and prepare you for it. And I know that many of you have listened and have made the preparations and are ready. Others of you are not, but you are in the process of becoming ready. Most of you, as you have done all your life, think that you can put it off until the very last moment, and then magically, by the wave of some magic wand, everything that you need, all of the training and the food stuff and the ammunition and the spiritual support will just come to you out of the ether. And I'm going to tell you that that will not happen. And because it will not happen, you will be a victim. A victim. Just telling you about this is just it's taking a lot out of me. I don't like to tell you about things like this. I don't like to even believe that anything like this had ever happened. Sometimes when I think about what Glenn did, I still cry. I mean real big alligator tears. Unashamed. Because of the tragedy of it. Not just for me and my family, but for Glenn. You see, he's lost the trust of all of us who are loyal and true Americans. And try as he might, he can never regain my trust. I can't speak for anyone but me, but once my trust has been broken, no one who has ever broken it can ever earn it back. Not ever, not in a million years. It cannot be done. That much I've learned in my life. Betray my trust once. Shame on you. Betray it twice, shame on me. I brook no shame on me. And neither should you. So with all that said and done, and it is said and done, I got this wonderful Roy Orbison CD today. I played a little of it for the people in the Round Valley. And I think it's time for a little music. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
Hey now, you better listen to me, every one of you. We've got a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot of work to do. Forget about your women and that water can. Today you're working for a man. Well, pick up your feet, you've got a deadline to meet. I'm gonna see you make it on time. Oh, don't relax, I want elbows and backs. I wanna see everybody from behind. Cause you're working for the man. You're working for the man. You gotta make it the man. You're working for the man. Thank you.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Mr. Cooper?
Yes, sir.
Good evening. I just hope that God can reach down and lift some of the load off your heart. Because you've really taken it from every direction. And the trust, as far as I'm concerned, there's no price tag you can put on trust. Honesty, trust, truth, there's no price tag. And once you've been befriended and then had the carpet pulled out from under you like that, it really, really makes you really feel for your fellow man, because you would never do that. You're raised the right way. I believe I'm raised the right way. And you just can't see that. And it's such an insult. It's such a shock to the system.
Yes, it is. But, you know, I'm not the first one that this has happened to. If you study the foundation of this country, you'll find that all of these things, and much worse, happened to the founding fathers. George Washington loved Benedict Arnold, considered him to be the best officer in his army, and was absolutely crushed when Benedict Arnold betrayed America and went over to the British Army.
Yeah, that was quite a blow.
It was a terrible blow. It was one of the only times that anyone ever saw tears in George Washington's eyes.
I believe it. There was a movie years ago called The Ten Gentlemen from West Point, and they actually brought out that point you just mentioned about Washington.
Yeah.
And Benedict Arnold.
Yeah, he loved Benedict Arnold. Considered him to be a brother. When he discovered that he was a traitor, he was absolutely overjoyed on the way to Benedict Arnold's home, where he was going to have a short respite from the war and be able to be with his best officer and his best friend. And that's when he discovered that Benedict Arnold was a traitor.
It's a crying shame, as they say.
Yep.
Hey, I want to wish you the best, and I pray for you and your family, and God bless everything you're doing for this country.
Thank you.
This is Carmine from Pennsylvania, but I've called you many times.
Thank you, Carmine.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Good night.
Well, we might as well just take calls. There's not that much time in the broadcast, and I've said everything that I can say. There's nothing else I can say tonight. I've sort of bared my breast, so to speak. 520-333-4578 is the number. If you've got, and you don't have to talk about this. You can talk about anything you want. Just get me through these last few minutes, okay? And so we can get through this night. And after all, Scarlett, tomorrow is another day. And that's really the best way to get through these things, minute by minute, hour by hour, and day by day. Good evening. You're on the air.
Bill, hi. How's it going?
How dare you ask?
Oh, yeah. Well, I came across a photograph of the Pope wearing a Maltese cross ring, and I was wondering what you thought of that, or what that said to you.
Before he was Pope, he was a member of the Knights of Malta. Pat Buchanan is a member of the Knights of Malta. If you elect Pat Buchanan to be the president of the United States, you'll be making a big mistake. The Knights of Malta are the militia of the Pope. They are sworn. Listen to me very carefully. They are sworn. Total allegiance to the Pope and to hearken to his side upon his beckon at any time that he beckons ever. When the Pope is considered to be in danger, they remove all the Swiss guards from the Vatican and replace them with members of the Knights of Malta.
Oh, wow. Well, I thought there was some kind of connection there. I'm definitely not a Pat Buchanan supporter, though. Don't get me wrong, believe me.
No, you shouldn't be.
No, I'm not falling for that one.
Shouldn't support anybody who belongs to any secret organization, no matter what it is. The only reason for secrecy in any community is not to have a benevolent organization existing for the good of the community, but to conduct business in secret that would not be approved by the community should the community discover exactly what it is.
Yeah, well, I agree. I just wanted to share that with you, and I appreciate your show. I've listened to you back, you know, when you were on WWCR from the old days, and I've gotten a lot of good information from you, and I appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Appreciate your call.
Bye. Okay.
Good night. Well, we got time for maybe one more call before we have to call it a night. The number is 520 333-4578. Good evening, you're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. This is Nick from New York.
Hi, Nick.
I just want to say a couple of things. First, thank you for what you've been doing for us, and keep on keeping on. The other thing was, in your book, Behold the Pale Horse, you wrote about the Galileo space probe.
Yeah, I wrote what their intentions are.
Right.
Making note that nobody knows if this is really going to happen because nobody's done it before.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I was just up in Maine the other day, and there was an article in one of the papers up there about the Galileo space probe has been on an extended mission since 1995 up at Jupiter and won't end its mission until January of 2000.
Yeah. Actually, according to NASA, its low orbit will deteriorate and it will plunge into the atmosphere of Jupiter on December the 31st, 1999.
Well, like I said, I found that interesting thing because you wrote about this in your book way back when, before there was an extended mission.
Before any of it happened. Yeah.
Right. You know, but I mean, it was like launched in 1989.
Before anybody even knew there was going to be a Galileo mission, I even named it by its name, didn't I?
Right.
Even NASA didn't know they were going to do it.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about. What happened to the website? I've been trying to get into it with my sister's computer.
WilliamCooper.net.
WilliamCooper.net. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I've been getting some bad static recently, and I haven't been able to hear you except for like the last 3 nights.
WilliamCooper.net.
Okay, I appreciate that. Have a good night. God bless you.
Thank you.
Bye.
That's it, folks. Good night. God bless each and every single one of you. Good night, Annie. Good night, Pooh. Good night, Allison. I miss you. I love you. I will dream about you tonight.
A candy-colored clown, they call the Sandman. Tiptoes to my room every night. Just a sprinkle stardust and a whisper. Go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away.
Listening to 101.1 FM Eager. 101.1 FM is your community service, nonprofit radio station. We now return you to All Oldies Most of the Time.
do, 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 do.
You wait and see every thought.